Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this next episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Beth Bergen. Now, Beth is an international life and business success coach, and she is a leadership consultant. Beth worked in the public sector for over 20 years while concurrently owning and assisting with daily operations of three successful small businesses, and has operated her own consultancy and coaching company, working nationally and internationally as a facilitator, a coach, a speaker, a writer, and in business and opportunity development since 2007. Now, these experiences have provided Beth with a unique combined insight into and an understanding of the demands of an executive role and the challenges all small business operators face daily. Beth is a creative thinker who uses powerful and thought-provoking questions to encourage others to explore things from a different perspective. Her strong sense of self is reflected in the courage she shows when working with clients, always challenging and encouraging them to make changes to themselves, their teams, and their organization, which have a flow on benefits at many levels. Welcome, Beth. I know you've got a lot more to tell me about the things that you've done, but that's certainly interesting. And we started our own businesses around the same time, just reading.
Yeah, we did
as well.
Thank you for having me here today. I'm really pleased to be here.
Oh, most welcome. It's the listening audience, you know, we have different business coaches come on different episodes, and I love it because we get so much variety in ideas and, you know, often flow back to the same concepts, but sometimes, you know, you're hearing it from different perspectives and different points of view and the different challenges. So I'm sure we're going to have a great time for the next hour or so. Now, there's more to Beth than just what I read out there, isn't there? So how about we get to know you a little bit more?
Okay. Well, as I said, I've owned and operated a number of successful small businesses, Janine. Probably like lots of people, I sort of left school thinking, what is it that I'm going to do? And my parents were both school teachers, and so I was kind of raised by two teachers, and always used to say, no, I'm not going to go and do that. And then when it came time for me to think about what was it that I wanted to do, the option of going into teaching and helping people to be the best that they could be was actually really there for me. So I went on to become a secondary school teacher and an educator myself. And I owned and operated a number of small businesses with my then husband. And so as I went through the education system, I moved into I did work with long-term unemployed people, and then moved from there into the vocational education and training sector through TAFE. And I had a number of different roles in TAFE, and that included being training in retail, working with other teachers, being an educational manager, having a national sort of business development role into the Indigenous space. And when I left, I'd been a faculty director for a period of time. And so I was pretty comfortable working, you know, between having family and supporting with these businesses. I was pretty comfortable with that. But like a lot of other people, I found myself in a situation where I was single with two kids under five. And what happened along the way too with that, Janine, was that I'd lost part of who I was, I think, because I was really encouraging and supporting my then husband a whole lot. So I kind of went from supporting him and having that support there in the household to still holding down this corporate job and having having two young kids. And so I'm well used to that kind of that constant juggle of keeping lots of balls in the air and staying positive and thinking, how am I going to pay the bills? And you know, wondering where am I going to find the time and where am I going to find the energy to do all that needs to be done. And so
that's a big deal, you know, that's and working and trying to manage the household yourself as well as dealing, you know, with the changes in the relationship and everything. That's it's a very big deal to do that.
And as you said,
you're not alone. There's people that are doing
it on a daily basis. But the thing that I did, and I, you know, a lot of people say to me, like, you weren't impacted, you didn't get stressed out, it didn't weigh you down the way that it seems to weigh down a lot of other people. And I think that was because I made a really clear decision about a number of different things. And one of them was that I was raised to be confident and resilient and to have a good solid self-belief. So I kind of drew on that. And it was really about making sure that whatever happened, that my sons and I were going to stay positive. Mm. We were going to really enjoy each other and we were going to make sure that we had some fun. Because for me, that laughter, you know, that joy, not being weighed down by the circumstance was pretty important. Mm. And I also wanted them to see that I wanted to be giving the best possible example for them. So, you know, we create a lot of really wonderful memories that we still laugh about today. One of the things that I did that a lot of people find quite extraordinary, and I think that I probably found this a little bit extraordinary myself at the time because, you know, I make my living and have always made my living by being a communicator. Because my then husband, we were in the process of getting divorced, because there was a lot of aggression coming from him, in terms of, like, every time I saw him when my sons were there, and remembering that they were quite young, there was a real lot of aggression that came from him. And I was never going to argue with him in front of them. That was there was just no way I was going to do that. So I actually made a really conscious decision to do two things. One was that I was going to treat it like a business relationship. So communication would be down in writing. I need to remind you that this was way before texting. So I think texting makes it much tougher for people now.
Oh, it does, because that's sort of immediate and emotional.
Yeah, and so people react to that rather than thinking about it and responding.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I did is that I made it. And so any communication was like a business communication. And so that cut any of that potential to be getting into big stoushes. But the other thing that I really very consciously did was I made a decision that I was going to focus on doing my parenting, that I was not going to do his parenting by default for him. And
what do you mean by that? That's a really interesting statement.
I was really busy. I had two children that lived here with me all the time. They were quite young. I had a full-time corporate job and I was managing everything by myself. I needed to devote my time and my energy to parenting those two kids and not be worried about the kind of parenting that their father was providing for them.
That is a really good suggestion to people, because you can't change what somebody else does, can you?
No.
And it just causes aggression and anger
and
disappointment and frustration and everything else that goes along with that.
And so what happened was that instead of me, and this is you've just absolutely hit the nail on the head beautifully, and the example I would give you, Janine, is this. Like, instead of me thinking, oh, he needs to be here at this soccer game. Where is he? And getting all aggro and getting into a stoush with him about where were you supposed to be. I left it to him to speak to his children when he saw them or when he phoned them about what was coming up so that he could then make his own arrangements to be there.
Now, yeah, that's just so sensible because, oh gosh, that would take so much stress out of the relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
And treating it like a business relationship. I've never heard anyone suggest that before. But obviously with the training that you've done, and that was just how you looked at it, and that's a great way to remove that emotion out of it and just do what you have to do.
Yep. You do what you have to do. You take the emotion out. You say, this is what's going on. So any communication, it's about, this is what's going on. So, you know, I'm not dropping the children or the children, this child won't be available to be picked up on Saturday because they're going to a birthday party. I will drop them to you at this time. And as a communicator, it was actually quite hard for me to do that initially. And then as I recognized over and over again, this is freeing me up to be the best parent I can possibly be. I'm not getting all tied up in expectations that because he no longer is living in the same house as his children, that he's suddenly going to be, super parent of the month after month after, because he wasn't doing it that well while he was in the house. So, and what it meant was that I cut the tie to any emotional energy that I was going to use. To waste in him, it was gone. It was gone. I didn't have to be hassling him about his parenting. I didn't have to say, where were you? Because I had no expectation that he was going to be there.
That's a good way to have it, is that no expectation, isn't it? And then you're never disappointed if you're not expecting stuff.
And you know, what it meant was, because I was calm and relaxed about that, when he wasn't the best parent that he could be, what it meant was that I wasn't passing a whole heap of frustration on to my son. So it made that whole thing kind of easier to manage. And what it comes back to, Janine, is that whole thing, and I know you will have seen this, and I'm sure that a number of people who are listening, you know, you don't let other people rent space in your head. When I see so many women whose anger is maintained because what they're trying to do is to get this person to turn into a really awesome parent, and they're so invested in that. Well, why weren't you there? Why weren't you there? Like, it's their gig. It's his gig. He's responsible for his relationship with his children. You don't have to manage that for him as well, because then actually if that's what happens, it's kind of like, you know, you've got three children that you're managing here and you don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, and you obviously got out of the relationship for a reason as well. So, yes, and that probably leads into, you know, I know you've shared with me some words that you live your life by. So do you want to? Yeah. And that, I think what we've been talking about leads into that a little bit as well.
I kind of like that. There are three words, and if you could see me now in my office in front of me, these are everywhere, and, you know, emails that I send out, they're on there. The first one is passion. And you know, I think that we've got to be engaged in our lives. We've got to be doing things that we enjoy to do. We've got, and even the things that we don't enjoy to do, we've got to find, you know, ways to either earn enough money to get other people to do them, or we just need to really connect with that passion and be be working towards that. The second one is wisdom, and I believe very, very strongly that we have, each of us has a wisdom. We know what the answers are. Those answers are all inside us. And as a coach, very often what I'm doing is connecting people to that wisdom. If you learn how to ask yourself better questions, then you can see those inklings of that wisdom yourself. And I guess that also connects a little bit to that intuition and you know, the willingness to kind of back yourself and just go with what you really feel is right. Mm. So that's the second word. And the third one is joy. You know, we've got to find the things that make us joyful. It's all about, like, I've used joy instead of love or happiness there, because I think that happiness is rolled up in joy, love is rolled up in joy, and it's really all about noticing and appreciating the small things that contribute to making the world a joyful place to be. And I always used to say to my kids, you know, when we would go and visit anybody else, there were two things. One was that the rules, you know, travel with us, the rules that we've got at home, they go with us when we go somewhere else. But the other thing was that your happiness travels with you, and other people can't make you happy. You need to be responsible, take responsibility for making yourself happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. It's one of the things I speak about often as well. You know, people are saying, well, look, I'll be a lot happier when I lose weight, or I'll be a lot happier when I have enough money to retire, or I'll be a lot happier when I've got, you know, away on holidays. Or, you know, there's always a condition to that happiness. And instead of just going, you know what, it's, well, today in Brisbane, we're speaking. Now, this will be interesting because when this interview comes out, it'll be more winterish, but we've got an autumn day here and 36 degrees, and
yeah, I know,
got the air conditioning on.
Yeah.
But you know, just the to be happy that, you know, you live in Australia, whatever your happiness there's so many things to be really happy about each day. I love the word joy. I've got a friend called Joy. And she is absolutely joyous, and that's what she says. She's joy by name and joy by nature. That's her.
Yeah, and I think it's so much easier to be negative. It's so much easier to find something to complain about. And you know, when I talk to my clients about living a joyful life, the place that I start them with, and look, it's really simple. But it's actually quite complex, because the complexity comes in being deliberate about doing this over and over and over. I speak to them about, grab a journal and just write down every day 3 to 5 things that you seriously appreciate about your life. Because, you know, it's important that you actually connect with all of these things. It's really important that you are acknowledging that there is much in your life to be joyful about. Because once you start to do that, you're going to open the door to noticing the things that can and do go right, rather than focusing on the things that go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a big point of it as well, is to, I mean, the things that go wrong are often the most amazing learning opportunities. We actually rarely learn when everything's going right all the time. It's the opportunity to learn is when things go wrong, and it's what we learn from it, what we change our behavior, and what we take away from it that makes the difference with a difficult experience, and just recognizing.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's you know, there's a little trick that I talk to people about when I'm in my seminars and when I'm coaching them, and it's a process that's called 3 gifts. And I'll just quickly explain that to you. Like in everything that happens to us is a learning opportunity. And I know, I get it. sometimes it can be a lot harder to identify what the learning is than it can be other times, but it's well worth your while spending the time actually checking it out. And the process that I use is this three gifts process, where really what you're doing is you're asking yourself these three key questions. And the first one is, what did I learn about myself? There'll be some things that you will have learned about yourself. And the second one is, what did I learn about others? Mm-hmm. So it might be one other person. It might be a group of other people. And the third one is, what did I learn about the circumstance? So if we just come back and use that example that I gave you earlier with me making the decision that I was not going to, that I was going to communicate with my ex-partner through written communication, treat it like a business relationship. So, you know, I would go to pick the kids up, he would put them in the car, he would be starting to carry on at me. What did I learn about him? He saw this as an opportunity to have a go at me, to be aggressive, to shift blame, to voice his displeasure or his discontent. What did I learn about myself? I was uncomfortable with speaking back to him. I didn't feel that it was a good example for my children. You know, what did I learn about the situation? I can change this. How can I change this? By cutting out that interaction, or putting that interaction into a different space or time frame or whatever.
So
you know, if you apply that three gift strategy, what do I learn? What did I learn about myself? What did I learn about others? What did I learn about the situation or the circumstance? You'll find very often you'll get many more than three gifts, and it starts you focusing on what are the possibilities, rather than getting weighed down with what keeps on going wrong. And that's where the beautiful joy comes in, and that feeds your wisdom, and it also feeds your passion.
It changes your perspective totally, doesn't it? You know, instead of getting into that wallow and it makes a difference, I would assume, with people that starting to, you know, feel depressed about situations as well. It's quite different when somebody obviously is in a real depressive state, you know, that's a different situation. But when people are starting to feel that things are just starting to be a bit overwhelming, then if they change his perspective rather than going, oh, this is so tough, I can't deal with it, how can I cope? And just changing those words around, what did I learn about myself? What did I learn about others? And what did I learn about the circumstances?
Yep.
And it means you're looking forward at something rather than looking
backwards.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's like when we've spoken before, I've talked about, for me, one of the major things is that we've got this awesome, awesome superpower, which is the power of choice. And there's so much to learn about choice. We need to understand that no one can take our choice away from us. Feels like they can. But, you know, the classic example would be someone like Mandela, who, you know, was imprisoned for all of those years and came out with a smile on his face. Why? Because he was choosing his attitude. He was choosing the way he was responding to what was happening around him. No one can actually take that away from you. What flows on from that, Janine, is that we're very quick to forget that making no decision is actually a choice. Like not making a choice is actually a choice. And what we forget is that when we choose to just keep on complaining about something, that is actually a choice as well. So an example that I would give you there is, somebody might be unhappy either in a relationship or at work, and they complain and complain and complain about it. And like, we all know someone who does this. They just complain constantly about what's going on, and they actually don't do anything to sort it out. That it's easier, and they've fallen into this pattern of complaining all the time. And in my clients, my coaching clients, get quite a big shock when I say to them, well, you know, you either do something to change it or you stop complaining.
Yes.
And they, because you and that's quite blunt. I recognise, you know, every time I say
like
it,
me,
I,
Beth, just do something.
I kind of go, this is a bit blunt, but that's a reality. Like, either stop complaining or do, because you actually all the time you are one choice away from a whole new life.
Yes, yeah, I'm very much like you as well. It's okay, fine. That's the problem. So what are you going to do about it?
So have the courage to make a choice. And like, what happens, and you would know this as well, Janine, what happens is that, you know, the classic example I give people is this: should I, well, you know, I'm going to stop doing this job. I'm going to leave my job. You know, I don't like it here. I'm gonna leave my job. And then the first mistake we make is we tell people.
Yeah.
And people don't answer the first part of the question, or they don't even hear the first part of the question or the first part of the issue. They just immediately go to, what are you gonna do then?
Yes. Yeah.
And so what happens is that we're not dealing with the two aspects of the issue. We're actually over here being feeding into this fearful situation that other people are raising for us. Well, you know, what are you going to do then, Beth? There are two issues. The first one is, do you want to continue doing what you are doing? And that's a yes no question, really.
Yeah, okay. And that's a very straightforward
question.
It's
yes or
absolutely,
no,
isn't it? Yeah.
It's yes or no. And if the answer is yes, shut up, stop complaining, go back to work. If the answer is no, the second question becomes, well, what will I do now?
Yep.
So then when you're telling other people about it, you're much more likely to say something like, I've really had enough of working with this team of people, or, you know, I'm not being stretched enough. It's time for me to look for something else. And instead of people go, oh, what are you going to do now? They'll just go, oh, okay, so what are you thinking that you'll do?
Yeah, that's a completely different way of wording it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And very often – that's all it takes for us to connect to that superpower of choice, for us to connect to our own wisdom. You know, before you were asking me about passion, wisdom, and joy, for us to be able to connect to that, it's really about changing some of that simple language. You know, I'll give you another, if we've got time, I'll give you another really effective one. My coaching clients, just they'll come back after I've asked them to do this activity and they'll go, whoa, I had no idea. Just think about how often you say sorry when sorry is totally unnecessary.
It's one of those things that when I hear friends say it, I have a line that I'll say, I'll slap you. Because what are you apologizing for? There's nothing that's your fault. You couldn't change it. It was not your responsibility at all. So, and I do say that, I'll slap you. It's probably.
Yep. And it's just like a red rag to a bull when people say it around me. And obviously the same thing with you. But I was one client recently, I'm saying to them, please take a notice of this. But I'll share two examples with you. The first one was, they apologized for getting to a doorway in a work environment before the other person did. Oh, sorry. Why? And the second thing that they were doing was apologizing because of the behavior of someone else. They couldn't influence this other person's behavior at all. They couldn't control this other person's behavior at all. And however, they felt compelled to apologize to everybody else for this behavior. It's when you start to actually be aware of noticing when you are saying sorry, it's insane how often you say it. And then think about how often you write it. And for women who are in business, what happens is, and I think women are worse at this than men are, they apologize for sitting around the table. They apologize for having the role that they've got. They, you know, we apologize for all sorts of things. If we want to make a suggestion at a meeting, then we will often apologize for even having that suggestion before we open our mouths. Oh, look, you might not think this is such a good idea, but, and we pop the idea out. And
this is a qualifier. And, you know, well, in that way, I won't be judged too badly if it's wrong, if I add the qualifier to it.
Which is the same as saying sorry. I'm sorry I'm even sitting around the table. And so that one makes a really massive kind of difference. It's that sort of language. And then also, as you would be aware, Janine, we live in a very blaming kind of culture. And you know, but, the word but is a very kind of blaming, and it's like a handbrake, the word but. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, yeah, well, that seems like a good idea, but, and you can almost hear everybody in the room going, as they put their brakes on. You know, and what I say to people is to replace but as often as they can with however, because however is a much more positive word. And, you know, with sorry, it's useful to replace sorry with either by saying nothing or by saying thank you. So if you feel like you need to apologize for being late, rather than saying, oh, sorry, I'm late, you can say, you know, thanks for your patience. I really appreciate you waiting. Mm.
And that puts you in this completely different state of, that puts you in the seat of authority then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And much more likely to have a productive get together, meeting, whatever it is that you may have been late for, you're much more likely to have that go positively for you because you're taking that positive frame into the meeting with you. So,
absolutely. And I wonder, have you ever sort of, you know, done an investigation as to where that particularly comes from with women? You know, it's obviously deep seated within us because it's common. Most people do it. You know.
Yeah. And my experience is that like many things, if we don't believe in ourselves, if we don't truly love who we are, and this is the core of a lot of the work that I do. I'll just give some context before I come back to finishing that statement. Like, people will present with all sorts of things that they want to have coaching about. I want to have coaching about my business. I want to have coaching about my communication skills, whatever it might be. And you know, we all have a number of different masks on, and the biggest mask that we put on is this kind of veneer that protects us from people maybe being able to look in and see how much we actually dislike who we are. And so in my experience, And in all the reading and the learning and the personal and professional development I've done around this space, when you don't feel good about who you are, when you don't love yourself, yes, you can be successful. However, you are much more likely to have greater success when you've done the work to be the best version of you that you can be. When you've ignited your own self-belief, when what you're doing is working towards reaching your fullest potential. Now, obviously, when we have this kind of conversation, what happens is that lots of people say, well, you know, like success doesn't necessarily have to be about the dollars. Success doesn't have to be about the high position and the social influence and whatever. And I could not agree with that more. Success is such a personal thing. But there are so many beautiful things that roll up into success. And when you like, when you love who you are, it's so much easier to love other people because you're presenting all the time as the best version of you. And what it means is that you're then much more able to love in a way so that the person you love actually feels free. They don't feel like they're tied to you because, you know, you're not using somebody else to make you feel good or to make you feel happy. You're able to meet people where they are in a whole different way. You don't go with a whole lot of baggage and a whole lot of expectations that this is what you're going to look like. You're a human being rather than a human doing, as much as I don't like that saying. It's kind of relevant
and
now.
That's a point too. And when you're in that space, you're not threatened by others or challenged by others. No. So you can actually go out there and do what you want to do and do it well without the thought that you're going to have to be mindful of you know, other people's competitors in the marketplace or, you know, other people doing – you know, threatening you or you know, saying the wrong thing about you and that. You just go do what you do.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that too, people definitely recognise and see that. And I think that's a sort of a level of confidence
an authenticity that comes with that because, you know, and I always say to people, like it's not others – others may view this as an arrogance or a cockiness, and you always have to be mindful yourself that you're not crossing that line to being arrogant about it. So, you know, for me, it's about there's a humbleness about it as well. But people can tell when you are feeling really good about who you are, then it just rubs off so easily and so quickly on other people, and it enables you to feel really good about what you're doing. Because what you're then able to do is you can fail and see the lessons. You're open to learning new things. Your curiosity is there because you're able to, in loving yourself, you're able to recognize that you're not perfect.
And you tend to attract other people too, don't you?
You do.
You attract more clients. You attract more people who want to be around you, and you definitely, you know, there's something about people who have got that level of confidence without arrogance that you just feel. That you don't have, and that's the thing is, I find when I meet people like that, I don't have to perform in their, not that I would anyway, but I don't have to perform in a certain way for their acceptance. Or you can just be with those people and feel comfortable with them.
Yeah, and I think for women in business, particularly Janine, the better they feel about themselves as a person, and they're much more able to own the skills that they do have and the potential that their business has and the successes of the business. They're not apologizing for, oh, yeah, don't know how that got to be successful. Yeah, a bit of a surprise. You know, they're able to actually own that. And the other thing that I would say that I believe very firmly flows on from this is that you're better able then to juggle all those demands on you. You know, I was telling you before, like two small children, next to no support from their father, corporate job, blah, blah, blah. You just get on and you do, because you don't suffer this need for to be perfect. You're not doing a guilt thing. You recognize the house can't be perfect because right now I can't afford a house cleaner, and I think that spending time with my children is much more important than cleaning the house, spending quality. Mm-hmm. So, or, you know, like, I'm not going to do this whole guilt thing because this is just the way that it is. And as long as I'm getting to the things that need to be done, it doesn't matter to me. You know, I know what's going on here. I'm not going to put up with other people's judgment thinking that I should be doing a whole lot more. I can't get to everything. I will get to the things that are most important. I will love my children through this, and they will know that they are loved.
And it gives you a permission to give yourself a break as well. I mean, that's the big thing too, isn't it? That giving yourself permission to just go, you know, you're not perfect, and because there's no such thing anyway. But you can just do the things that you want to prioritize, and that's the hard thing when you're juggling that family life, you know, the work balance, the business balance, the balance about what you should be doing with the kids, the should word, people should allow themselves, and the, you know, taking them to sport, should they be doing swimming as well as ballet and gymnastics and football and, you know, going to music lessons and all of the things that we impose in our lives to make our lives more difficult and then feel responsible and guilty when we're not living up to a standard. And in the meantime, you're trying to juggle things as well.
Yeah. And for many women I know, when they're, you know, they may have an idea about a business and they are either trying to set it up while they've got another job, or they're trying to set it up while they are in the you know, the last months of a pregnancy and the first months of having a brand new child. And we all know that that's all going to go perfectly, because any baby we have is going to be friggin' awesome and beautifully perfect and sleep exactly when we want them to. and we know that doesn't happen because
we've set up
that expectation, so we're setting ourselves up totally to fail. So, you know, it's really about recognizing that if what you do is add the guilt on there, you're just making it worse. And so I say to people, you've got a choice here. You're going to do guilt or not. No, right? Wipe it out. Just don't do it. You know, I actually don't believe in there being a balance between family life and your work or your business time, because usually for one thing to be in balance, the other one has to be out of balance. So I talk a lot about what I call harmony, and harmony is really about this recognition that week one is different from week two, which is different from week three, and that if we think about the demands that are there for everyone in the household, and we are able to develop the communication skills so that we talk about this on a regular basis, and then we're running a diary or some kind of scheduling, we actually can live our life in harmony. So that if what happens is that you need to get to a really important workshop that you're presenting, and you need to leave home at 7:45, that the children all need to be somewhere by 8:30, and there's no option for you to drop them off, then the father can be, if you've communicated and worked your way through this, the father can be making changes in advance in his work circumstance to make sure that there's not conflicting demands. Now, that's not going to happen if you raise it at 25 minutes past seven when you want to leave the house at 7:45 and he wants to leave the house at 7:50. It's not going to happen then. So to create that harmony, you've got to have these conversations regularly in enough advanced time so that these changes can be made and everyone has the opportunity to do the things that they want to do without getting to them or arriving to them so stressed out that their capacity to be effective, whether they're going to school to be a student or whether they're going to run a workshop or go to a meeting, we want them to everyone to be effective when they get there, yeah?
Yeah, and the other thing too is something that we don't do that well that often is we ask people don't ask people for help.
Also, I agree.
You know, whether it's not just awesome the partners point. There, but yeah. There's other people in our lives that and I know I've got someone in my life that I offer to help a lot, and I know I could help them with just overcome, you know, with their depressive issues or just little things. Yeah. I say, you know, say, well, stay here on your way through or things like that. And it's, oh, no, we're fine. We'll be right. And that's the answer every single time. And I know it's not right. And I can't push any more than what I do and I continue to offer. But it feels like a slap in the face every time I offer something when it's, no, we're fine, that I feel like I've been slapped in the face. So I'm very conscious of it when somebody offers me something that I, if it's the right space to be able to accept it, that I wouldn't just brush things off with a, no, I'm fine. I would make sure that they're aware of that, that there was a reason why I couldn't or didn't accept it at the time because
I love it that you've raised that because I don't know how this is for you, but I certainly know that when I was single with two small kids, and I've spoken to other women, both partnered and single, who have often expressed the same thing. The hardest thing in the world for me to do was to ask other people to look after my kids. I was happy if I was paying. No problem. Click, you know, it just ring them up, book them, pay them. That was it. But this whole thing, and I was really happy to take other people's children, but it was this process of asking. And there would be times when like I knew I had to be somewhere really important in less than 24 hours and I still hadn't arranged that. And it took me a little while to just go, oh, don't be so ridiculous. Like these people are very happy. It's not like you've got, you know, terror kids. They're awesome kids. They're very respectful, blah, blah, blah. You know, but it was just this whole asking for help around that. Really happy to ask for help around all sorts of other things. And it's quite interesting when you talk to other women about that. And that's the classic, and yet we're offering all the time.
We
for
are,
others,
and,
so I hear but, what you're
and
saying.
And I think it is. I find it as a talent. So I feel a bit of a slap in the face when I'm brushed off each time, and I think that's something to be aware of when people are offering to help to accept. It's one of the things I've been taught in sales training. If you turn up to a business, and it's quite obvious that they're going to have a cuppa or something and they offer you something and you say no, because what you're doing in a sales conversation is putting the first no in the room.
Yep.
So instead you have something, just a water, and say, oh, water would be great. Yep. Thank you, if it's not too much trouble. So at least you're putting the first yes and accepting that. And so in sales, that's a really important factor is to, you know, most, and women again will be going, oh, no, don't go to bother. It's fine. Whereas you are creating a barrier between you and the person that's offered it then. And it is an important factor. Hey, we've.
But I also, I just want to say this, but we've covered a whole lot of stuff, I know, but I just want to say this. The other thing that happens is that we are so busy getting stuff done, as women. We're getting stuff done. We're making stuff happen. Yeah, aren't we awesome? We're doing this. We're rushing here. We're taking the kids to this. We've got all these balls in the air. We're juggling them. We actually move out of our feminine space. Mm. And what I'm really conscious of is that when we do accept an offer that someone is making to us, when we are gracious enough to lean back and to accept something, we're receiving, which is our feminine space to be. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're spending a lot more time in your masculine than your feminine, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe how much we've covered and how quickly the time's gone, Beth. It's been amazing, hasn't it? And there was a whole lot of other points that we were going to get to. But let's look at the three takeaway points. And some of these we've covered and some of them we haven't. So what would you like the listeners mostly to take away?
So the three really important things are this. That the first one, just following on from the conversation that we were just having, is to look to develop the scheduling and the communication skills that are needed so that you can live your life in harmony, that it's not about leaving, but everyone leaving the house every day in such a stressed out state that you're teaching them how to be anxious before you teach them anything else. So that's really important. Find a way to do that. And if necessary, schedule a planning conversation or a harmony conversation so that you can work out what's happening for the next week to 10 days. That's the first one. The second one is to celebrate the successes, not just the great big ones, but the small ones as well, because every single success, when you celebrate it, serves to fill up your tank, and you're better able to love who you are. You're better able to meet your own needs when your tank is full, but you're also in a better space to be able to be there for other people when you do that. And the third thing is, I'd like you to be willing to learn how to unlearn things. Like, you know, we get so caught up in being right and being perfect. Be willing to learn how to unlearn and also to see the lessons that can be learned. And that comes back to the three gifts that I was talking about. What did I learn about myself? What did I learn about others? What did I learn about the circumstance or the situation?
That's a really good point. And that's be willing to unlearn. And it's, you know, you and I are both lifelong learners, and we're constantly, you know, wanting to get more information, realizing that we don't know everything about our subjects. I mean, I've just spent 6 days learning about a topic that I've been coaching on for years, and learning from, you know, for me to be better, I learn from other people as well. And every time you're picking up something, which is, it means that you can then share more information and share better information as well. And sometimes what you've been doing, you go, well, you know what, that's actually a better way to do it. And you can look at something from another space. So be willing to unlearn is a really good point. I like that one as well. Well, Beth, that is just a ton of information, and it's just a great conversation, and I've had so much fun with you. So,
me too.
So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, they can contact me at my website, which is bethbergen.com. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can, if they want to email me, it's coach@bethbergen.com. And also I'm on Facebook at Beth Bergen Coach. So there's Beth Bergen, which is me, but my coaching page is Beth Bergen Coach. But one of the things I'd like to do, Janine, is if people email me, coach@bethbergen.com, and remind me that they've heard me on this We Are Women podcast with Janine Vosper, I'm happy to send people a link that they can use for a complimentary coaching session.
Oh, that's good. That's great. That's very generous of you. Thank you, Beth. And I just want to spell your surname so that everyone's got that. It's Berghan. So the website is Beth Bergen, BethBergan.com. And the email address is coach@bethbergen.com. And you can find you on Facebook, of course, as well. Yep. Look, that has been really interesting, and just
you know, I'm hoping that people listening have thinking about things that they've got happening in their life and in their business, and that they might sort of think about changing the perspective on it if there are things that are happening that are causing them stress and anxiety, because we can only change ourselves. We can't change other people. We'd love to.
Yep.
We'd love to have a little switch that goes, oh, that's going to make you a nice, helpful, cooperative person. But unfortunately, we don't. So we have to deal with it. So thanks, Beth. That was just a wonderful conversation, really valuable information.
My absolute pleasure. And, I look forward to hearing people's feedback. And obviously what I'll be doing as well is sharing the podcast when it's available with my list and my tribe and people that I engage with. So it's been a wonderful to speak with you, and I love it when it's a conversation, because I'm always saying to my clients, and I make it an approach that I take. The power of really deep, meaningful conversation is kind of healing. It's up there with laughter, I think. We need to be able to actually talk about the things that really matter and not shy away from those. And it all comes down to risking being alive, really.
I totally agree. Thank you. So thank you, everybody. That's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to recommend to your friends and to share the podcast as well. Particularly, you know, there's something that's been of interest that you've gone, I love this, and I think somebody else would love it as well as they heard it as well. I really appreciate your feedback. So when you get an opportunity to leave some feedback for the podcast, and please give it a 5-star rating if that's what you choose to do. You can find me and also you can have a chat to me, a complimentary chat as well, if you book in through my calendar, which is on the JeanineVosper.com website, and visit there, have a look around, see what's happening on there. There's a whole lot of free blogs as well as all the previous episodes of the We Are Women podcast. So that's me signing off until another episode. Thank you very much for your support. It's always truly appreciated, and enjoy a life and don't, what is it? Have a lot of passion, wisdom, and joy. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Jeanine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.